So as an introduction, you know that we're going through the seven factors of awakening. And we've been through the first five with Gil and Rachel as our guides. Started with mindfulness. Gil gave us this word, hear. That investigation with the accompanying word, what or how. And third was energy. Gil offered a few words, engage or this. And then fourth was joy. The word was yes. And then tranquility or calm, introduced by Rachel last night, joy and tranquility. So tonight I'd like to introduce the sixth factor of awakening, concentration. But something can happen when we hear this word, concentration. It can be this feeling of, I have to bear down and focus. So Gil offered this word, steady. Concentration as steadiness, as opposed to a bearing down, focused. And I'd like to build on that, broaden a little bit this idea of the sixth factor of awakening. So concentration, as many of you know, I'm sure, is a translation of the word samadhi. I like this word samadhi. It has a very nice feeling, samadhi. Feels like it has a little bit more space and ease, samadhi. I'm going to be using this word samadhi to talk about the sixth factor of awakening. So rather than highlighting the focusing aspect, which is a part of samadhi, but I'd also like to broaden and expand and maybe even loosen this idea of what samadhi is. And maybe we'll start with a definition as a starting point is that samadhi is something like the mind and the body feeling unified and whole, settled, steady, in a state of well-being. So there's a sense of collectedness, a sense of ease, maybe a sense of coming together. But it involves the whole mind, the whole body, settled and steady, and a sense of well-being. I kind of like this word well-being because it's a little bit vague. And allows us to find different aspects of it. We all know that retreat practice has difficulties in the mind and in the body. So I don't want to say that it has to be bliss and nothing but happiness. But can can there be a pocket of our experience, aspect of our experience that has a little bit of this well-being, maybe a sense of contentment or ease? So sometimes when we think about samadhi or concentration, it's very easy to fall into this thinking, I either have it or I don't. Yes or no, on or off. But rather, the experience and the practice, it's more a spectrum. A spectrum, not from on to off. But again, building on this, something that Gil said, I think he said a few times, he was directing us towards ouch or ah. I'd like to say that ah maybe is this well-being, and that there's a spectrum between ouch and ah. We don't have to choose one or label our experience as one and only exclusively that one. There's a whole range between ouch and awe. In the same way, there could be a whole range between fragmented and whole. Maybe there can be lots of little pieces. Our mind is disconnected from the body, lost in story. Or maybe there's aspects of the mind that is disconnected from other aspects. And there's different degrees of which that can happen. It's not an on-off. Or there can be more and more a sense of wholeness, completeness, unified. Less trying to separate or disown or cut ourselves off from part. Maybe with steadiness also can be a spectrum. Maybe one end of the spectrum is something like ricocheting or maybe wobbly, and then steady. So rather than thinking of samadhi as, do I have it? Can I get it? Am I good enough to get it? Instead, we can just feel that, oh yeah, there's a spectrum. I'm moving around throughout the day, throughout different sits, different walks, different things that we're doing. We can just find ourselves moving along this spectrum. If maybe these three elements of ouch and awe spectrum. I'm just making this up here. Wobbly and steady spectrum. And fragmented and whole spectrum. It feels like a kinder way to kind of view our experience. A gentler way to think about how our practice is unfolding in a less rigid way. So I talked a little bit about having some steadiness, but samadhi is a little bit more than just steadiness and well-being and this sense of wholeness. There's also a sense of malleability. The mind being more agile, a little more fluid. With samadhi, the mind is not rigid and stuck, but just more able to pick up and use different approaches, different perspectives. Certain ease that happens with samadhi. Perhaps it's a little bit easier to notice what is here and what, or to engage with the experience, with this malleability, to explore our experiences and our relationships to those experiences. Of course, with some steadiness and some malleability, samadhi also allows a certain amount of refinement, the ability to see more and more subtle things. Maybe there's different or deeper experiences of here. Maybe a more complete experience of here or what. And of course, in order to see the different roots of our suffering, that which is underlying some of our clinging, we need to be able to see, or it's helpful to see, these more and more subtle experiences. So in this way, samadhi can really help us to find greater and greater freedom and ease, as we're able to see things that might not be able to be seen with a mind that's a little more busy, occupied. And another quality that as samadhi deepens is a type of emotional steadiness that comes with a steadiness of the mind, steadiness of the body. This doesn't necessarily develop linearly, but this may be the peaks and valleys of our emotional experience start to be quite so high, quite so low, and there's a certain amount of steadiness that really supports seeing clearly our experiences and seeing clearly our relationship to our experiences. Sometimes what we see with meditation practice, what we experience, is difficult. You don't need me to sit up here and tell you this. But this emotional steadiness that can come when the mind and the body start to steady can really support us, enable us to be with these, whatever's arising. Including if it might be some experiences, some exalted, blissful experiences. Some emotional steadiness can help us when those experiences fade away, as they will. As well as maybe some of the more troubling, difficult, painful experiences. Some of this emotional steadiness can help provide a type of cushioning effect. Allows us to be with it. See it. Maybe it makes, if on this ouch to awe spectrum, maybe it makes us not have to go so far down the ouch side of that spectrum. Maybe this cushioning effect, maybe there's a, we still feel things the same, but then maybe the duration doesn't last as long. So bouncing back, or sooner we can see how we're caught up and able to let go in some way. And all these, of course, help support the capacity to really be okay with whatever is arising, which of course is the seventh factor of awakening, equanimity. So these different qualities of samadhi contribute to a balanced way to be with what's arising. But I'd also like to add another aspect of samadhi that sometimes we don't talk about as much. That somehow there's, with the stilling, the quieting, the steadying, just this movement along the spectrum. I'm not saying you have to be at the end of the spectrum, but this, just this movement towards more wholeness, this movement towards more steadiness, this movement towards more well-being, comes with a sense of warmth, a sense of love, a sense of care, that's also supportive. And we can allow ourselves to be supported by that. And it kind of gives samadhi this quality of being soft and warm. And all these, as I said, helps us to be okay with whatever's arising, which helps prepare the mind for even deeper understanding and profound letting go. That is even greater freedom. So the mind and samadhi can helps us pierce through perhaps some of the superficial appearance of objects, and so that we can see more clearly. Maybe what's evident is how the objects are impermanent, changing, arising and passing away. Maybe what's seen is that they're not satisfying, these objects. That they lack a permanent or unchanging identity, these objects. They don't have an inherent identity. Right? So the seven factors of awakening. Part of awakening is awakening to this, is seeing this nature of objects, nature of ourselves, nature of all conditioned things. So with this gentle encouragement to move towards steadiness, move towards wholeness, move towards well-being, it can be helpful to see the bigger picture also of samadhi practice. Again, to help us get away from this thinking of I have it or I don't have it. So often the practice can shrink if we're focused on this yes-no idea of whether we're focused or not. As soon as we have this idea of am I concentrated? Then the next thought very often is a measuring mind. My measuring mind does not lead to greater freedom. I suspect this is true for many of you. So to help move us away from that, to consider that when we are doing samadhi practice or cultivating samadhi, and to help us get away from yes, no, instead to consider there's a spectrum. But not only is there a spectrum, quite a few things are getting cultivated while we're cultivating samadhi. We can stretch our sense of what we're doing when we do meditation practice instead of, I have to bear down and focus, or I have to achieve or attain some particular state. Sometimes it's not what happens in meditation. Sometimes we're far from samadhi. It's perfectly natural. This is how our minds work. We don't get to just choose what our minds do all the time. We practice so that we can incline the mind, intend for it to go a certain direction. And probably everybody here knows that the stilling, the steadying, the quieting can be a slow process. Days, weeks, years, decades, however long it might take. So patience. We're learning patience also. It's a beautiful, helpful quality. We're learning how to not get so hooked into impatience when we're practicing samadhi, cultivating samadhi. This is a few words from a song that I learned years and years ago that I heard on the radio that really stuck with me. It goes like this. I often worry, is it so? The lessons of patience are learned slow, and earnings of labor may never show. Right? How we so often want to learn patience, but quickly. There's only one way to learn patience. Only one way, and it's not quickly. Also with cultivating samadhi, we're developing and some perseverance or diligence. This willingness to come back again and again and again, whether it's during meditation to our object, whether that's coming back and coming back to meditation retreat, whether it's coming back just within a retreat to the meditation hall, this idea of kind of sticking to it, maybe with, you know, wavering amounts of enthusiasm. But I don't think we should underestimate how powerful this can be, kind of the hanging in there. The practice with cultivating samadhi, we're also cultivating the capability to soften or let go the judging mind with this repeated coming back. Of course, we're noticing that we've slipped off the object or I'll just say that, we slipped off the object. And so often, or it can be easy for a part of our experience to be like browbeating the another part of our experience, trying to force ourselves to stay. But with the repeated coming back, there's also a certain amount of letting go of the intensity of that judging mind. Maybe it's getting softened. So when we are endeavor to cultivate samadhi, we're just gently encouraging a movement towards well-being, a movement towards steadiness, a movement towards wholeness. Keeping in mind that probably throughout the day, those three different elements may be in different ratios or show up in different intensities. But it doesn't have to be a yes, no, am I there yet type of calculation. So some things that can support our cultivation of samadhi, whether we're here on retreat or in our daily lives. One thing is kindness. Kindness to ourselves, kindness to others. That softening of the heart, that openness, that warmth, that really supports a sense of steadiness and wholeness and well-being. So inner and outer kindness helps create the conditions for samadhi. Maybe many of you had a similar experience as mine. I had no idea how mean I was to myself until I started meditating. Wow, it was shocking. It was heartbreaking and I couldn't stop. I was convinced somehow. I'm not sure what the inner critic is a, you know, a habit. But I see so clearly now how it's really not that helpful. It's not helpful. And it only arises in certain times and much easier to, more readily able to see it and say, oh, okay, there you are. Hello. And put it down. But this inner critic is a part of a fragmentation. Like we're trying to like disown part of ourselves, or we're trying to pretend something doesn't exist often, or I'm not exactly sure how it works. But it's not a movement towards wholeness. It's not a movement towards well-being. It's not a movement towards steadiness either. So inner and outer kindness can really support the cultivation of samadhi. And of course, there's a reason why here on retreat we have small rooms with not a lot of busyness in them. There's a reason why the meals are delicious and fabulous, but not too complicated. There's a reason why the schedule has a steadiness of walking and sitting. And that is this movement towards simplicity. This movement towards not being distracted with lots of different things. if any of you have ever, certainly not on this retreat, but on another retreat, you might have been tempted to look on the internet or your cell phone or something like this. And you might have noticed what happened afterwards. So like, wow. Kind of entering into the busyness of other things instead of here within the retreat center. There's this movement towards simplicity. And simplicity can also be supported by what we call guarding the sense doors. It's kind of a clunky phrase. But that is, you know, just to pay attention when we are watching something that's really and pulls us out of our experience. We can even do this with the mind door. As we get steady and our mind's a little bit more malleable, we can start to see, oh yeah, this thought pattern usually leads to this big story, which leads to this big agitation. Oh, maybe I don't really need to go there. So simplicity, watching what we're doing with our senses. We don't have to cut ourselves off from the world. We don't have to, you know, not look at anything. It's just noticing that when seeing or hearing or tasting is really pulling us away. And instead choosing to not be pulled away, but to be with our experience. Something else that can support this cultivation of samadhi is a receptivity, a connection, an openness to beauty and nature. This also can kind of soften the heart and open the mind. That allows some well-being and some steadiness to arise. A love of the Dharma. Maybe appreciation and gratitude. All these qualities of the heart can really support a steadiness, a settling. But of course, if we say that we want to cultivate samadhi, that invariably means working with the hindrances. They go together. When we talk about the hindrances, we often are talking about them in relation to getting in the way of steadiness being settled. There's an analogy in the suttas that I like. It goes something like this. Just as the river Ganges slants, slopes, and inclines to the ocean, in the same way, a concentrated mind slants, slopes, and inclines to freedom. I like this idea of the one way, you know, rivers only go one direction. But when you think about a river, you will know that there are lots of boulders in the river. right? It's not clear, it's not straight. There's little tide pools or eddies, maybe I should say. Right? This is how practice is also, is that there's obstructions or boulders. But rivers, it's not that they avoid the boulders. They just go right up to them, touch them, experience them, and find a way around, over. I don't know, around or over, I guess, most likely. So in the same way, our practice, I'm using this word, boulders, there's things that, where we're a little bit stuck, something's hindering, obstructing our way. It's perfectly natural. Of course it's this way. So the hindrances, we can think of them as these different energy states or forces in the mind. It can be a movement towards something, sensual desire, the movement away from something, aversion. Or maybe there's an increased energy with a spinning, buzzing quality. Restlessness and worry, the third hindrance. Or maybe there's decreased energy, sense of heaviness, sloth and torpor, the fourth hindrance. Or maybe there's an energy that seems to be all in our head somehow. Confusion, should I do this? Should I not do that? Should I practice this? Can I do that? Are these teachings real? Do they know what they're talking about? Who are these teachers? Sure, right? So these five hindrances, sensual desire, aversion, restlessness and worry, sloth and torpor, doubt. It's part of the human experience. For me, I feel comforted that, you know, in the suttas purported to be from thousands of years ago are describing these. Thousands of years ago they're talking about this. How many people through the years have had these hindrances? This is just part of the human experience. So there's different ways we can work with the hindrances. You're all experienced practitioners. You probably have some of your familiar ways. Maybe I'll just say a few things here. You probably all know to look at not only the hindrance, what is happening, the what, or the here, but also the what or how. How are we relating to it? Do we have aversion to aversion? Do we have doubt? Is this doubt? Do we have doubt about doubt? Do we have desire for desire? Are really that juiciness that comes from really wanting something? So there's the hindrance. And there's our relationship to it. But something that's really important is not to take them personally. Because one of the ways that the hindrances affect us is they affect our perspective, the frame of reference, the lenses in which we view things. And we're more apt to think that because we're experiencing desire, it means something about ourselves. It means something about our practice. Because we're restless, it must mean something. But this is part of what hindrances do, is they kind of affect our perspective so that we can't see the bigger picture and that we kind of get locked in and tight around them. This is how they hinder. They wouldn't be hindrances. So it can be really helpful as best we can. I'm not saying we can do this all the time and that it's easy, but as best we can, to not take them personally. They don't mean something about our value as a meditator, our value as a person. They're just things that arise in the mind. They arise in everybody's minds. And to help keep in mind that they do shape our perspective. I remember this time being on a retreat and feeling quite savvy and proud of myself that, this is desire. And being with it and realizing that it was starting to abate and go away, and it would rise up again. Sometimes I was having these wild fantasies. And then it would quiet down, it would flare up a little bit and then quiet down. And then it was quiet for the remainder of the sit. I was feeling kind of proud of myself. The bell rings. Okay. I sit there for a little bit. Everything's fine. I have a certain amount of settledness. I go to the lunch line. Look at my plate. Oh, look at this. This is fantastic. I definitely need a little bit more of this. Oh, look at this. This looks so great. I'm going to put this on and this and this. I left that with this huge plate with a huge amount of food. I just couldn't see how the desire, this hindrance of desire, had kind of colored like everything, that I just wanted everything. And it wasn't until I actually could see all this food on my plate that I could see the desire. Oh, yeah, okay, I thought I had worked with this, but no. So this is what hindrances do. They kind of color the way that we view things. So as best we can to keep that in mind, that when they are present, this is most likely the way that we view things are colored by them. So we should expect hindrances to come and go, just like samadhi is along the spectrum. Hindrances are along a spectrum too. Right, the really obvious desire I could see, but when it had gotten softer and quieter, I couldn't see it. It wasn't until it was obvious I could see it. So in the same way, the hindrances can be really overt. And a common one that happens, they can be overt or they can be subtle. And a subtle one that happens when we're cultivating samadhi, it can be a subtle form of a type of sloth and torpor, where there's a little bit of dullness that comes in. That is, as the mind and the body start to settle and steady, we might find ourselves in this cottony, cozy kind of place that for a little bit feels like a relief. We're not necessarily bombarded with our senses so much. So it's not that we're falling asleep, but that the objects are losing their edges. Maybe things are getting a little bit foggy. Maybe we feel like we're in a little bit of a stupor. The mind isn't energized or bright. Instead, this can be like a sinking mind, a little bit of a sinking feeling. At first, it might feel like, because it's not our usual way of being in the world, but it might feel like, this is good. Feels soft and cozy. But if you stay there, you'll discover that it's not the way forward. It's not forward leading. Instead, it just kind of sinks. And the energy drops out, and maybe you fall asleep, or maybe your enthusiasm for the practice falls away or something. So So instead, to bring with this stillness and the steadiness, to bring also some brightness, just enough energy. And we can do that if we find ourselves in this kind of almost stupor-like feeling. Maybe we can reconnect with what's happening here. What? How? Just a little bit of, you know, energy to reconnect and establish a greater intimacy with what's happening, instead of kind of like sinking into this fluffy, foggy, cloudy sensation. Sometimes we're tempted to do when we discover, like, oh, I've lost the edges of things. Things are not clear. There can be a wish to like focus and bear down even more. But often that's the opposite movement. That can be like a tightness, and that tightness can help us sink. Instead, what can be helpful is add a little bit more space. Some spaciousness. I know that I'm saying to also have some intimacy with the object, but also with space. So that's not too contracted, too tight. Because this tightness is often another common experience when we're developing samadhi. This tightness with efforting. This really, really trying so hard to get settled. And that works to a certain extent, but only to a certain extent. I think many of us have war stories about long retreats, or... And one of mine is about this, about being on a long retreat and having this idea, I'm going to get concentrated. I managed through just sheer, I don't know how exactly, to just get still. I didn't notice that how tight I was and how brittle the mind was. And what went with this tightness and this brittleness that I didn't notice was also this aversion, like, get away from me, can't you see? I'm trying to be still. You know, this kind of like this not warmth, not love, not malleability, but this real brittleness. And it was turned out to be so painful. It was really painful to want to be concentrated, and I kind of was concentrated, but it was a miserable experience. And it came through this effort, that often the effort leads to tightening. So with samadhi practice, it's just a very, very gentle, it's not a grabbing on. I'm trying to remember what Gail did. He was doing something with a spaceship, like landing on his finger, right? I don't remember exactly how this was, but... Oh, yes. And thank you, Tanya. It was to touch the center. Thank you. See, you guys remember. I'm saying the same thing, just using different words, right? This movement towards well-being, this movement towards wholeness, this movement towards steadiness. Because we do have to apply some energy and some effort, but in a way that has with it some space, some kindness. And this is part of the art of practice, is to know what's the balance there, how to do this. These things that seem seemingly opposite, of have spaciousness and effort and stillness and energy and brightness and collectedness. So a big part of samadhi practice is experimentation, exploring, and like, oh, okay, I can see that this experience tends to lead to this other experience. Okay, maybe I don't need to go there, I can go here. Maybe I don't need to go towards the ouch, I can go towards the awe. Notice when you're going towards fragmentation, trying to disown or separate, or whether that's disowning parts of our mind or getting completely disconnected from our bodies. When you notice that kind of fragmentation, realize, oh, that's not the direction. More can we go towards wholeness? And with well-being, if you're noticing that you're being filled with ill will, or I mean, sometimes that's just a hindrance that arises, but is there a sense of less well-being, less, more ouch, I really use that word. Another kind of vague word that we can all find our way with, hopefully. And of course, the body is so important in samadhi practice. If we have this idea that samadhi is just about concentration, we may think that it's all about the mind, getting the mind focused. But all these things I've been talking about, the well-being, the wholeness, and the stillness, requires or needs the body. It includes the body, the whole body. As people get more and more concentrated, the body has less of a role. But in the beginning, it's a vital and vitalizing part of samadhi practice. The body, we can use it in a way to help us see when we're getting too tight, to help us feel when we're going towards ouch or fragmentation. Also, some people like to use the body as an object of meditation. Maybe body scans, some people do. Or maybe just being sensitive to the whole body while doing breath practice as a way of cultivating or samadhi. But I don't want us to think that samadhi is just about the mind. It's really about our entire experience. And some of what I've been pointing to might be helpful to be a little bit more explicit. Is that a big part, maybe the majority, you can explore for yourself if it's the majority, maybe the big part of practice, of samadhi practice, is a letting go. A letting go of thinking that things have to be a particular way. A letting go of believing what the hindrances are throwing up for in our awareness. It's more about like a kind of a relaxing and a letting go, a softening, as opposed to a bearing down, gritting your teeth, white-knuckling it. There's a sense of letting go. There can also be a sense of receptivity. It'd be really important in samadhi practice. Oh yes, this too. Kind of receiving what experiences are arising, as opposed to pouncing on them or shoving them away or some other really effortful engagement with them. Instead, kind of an opening, allowing, receiving quality. Then also, part of developing samadhi is, of course, there is a certain amount of effort. A certain amount of diligence. A certain amount of this coming back again and again to the object, whether our object is this breathing. Some people use metta practice for concentration. Some people use more open awareness and just noticing continuously the different objects that are rising. Whichever way you practice can be a way to cultivate and support samadhi. Very often it's the continuity of mindfulness, simple mindfulness, that leads to greater and greater stillness and wholeness and well-being. Maybe that's enough for now. Let's sit for a minute or two.